started. Thanks, everyone, for calling into tonight's teleseminar with Karen Scholl. We have some topics tonight which are spooking, bolting, rearing, mounting on the trail, and bit progression. Our first question tonight is about spooking. I have a new 17-year-old Tennessee Walker mare. She's been on hundreds of trail rides all over the country, led parades, and won competitions in trail riding events. So I thought she would be fearless. The last two times I've been out with her, close to home, once alone and once with a younger horse, she has spooked and gone down on her front right knee. The first time I thought she may have tripped, but now I know it was a spook reaction to her surroundings. Luckily, I'm deep in the saddle and didn't fall forwards. It seems extreme to me. What do you think about that? I feel confident in the saddle and don't understand. Thank you, Joyce.
And I'm sorry, repeat the one part. She went down, the horse went down with her?
The horse went down on her front right knee each time.
On her front right knee, yeah.
Yep.
You know, it's a funny thing with horses. You know, it seems like, you know, it's really extreme behavior, but, you know, it's just like us. We can be a very confident person. We can be in our own home. You know, we can be in our own home with our family members in the other room, and somehow we get a sense that we're alone, and then all of a sudden we're not. You know, like you'll come around the corner and your husband startles you, and it's crazy because you knew they were there in the house anyway. But we just get, I think horses are like that, you know, in that they have that sense of, you know, everything is one way and then suddenly it's not. And so we get startled. So one of the things that happens is we get this idea that, you know, a horse is bomb-proof. That's one label in particular that I, you know, try to emphasize to people is to be careful of that one, because what we tend to do is we make an assumption. As we say, okay, well, we have this bomb-proof horse, and, you know, we can take that horse anywhere. And it sounds like kind of this scenario. You know, the horse has led parades and, you know, gone on trail rides all over the country, these kind of things. So if we can just kind of think about it from, you know, a horse's perspective, in that, you know, they're a living, breathing, thinking, feeling creature, that they get surprised, you know, just like we do. So I think the important thing to do is to look at that and know that every horse has the capability to be taken off guard or surprised, and that they can have a flight reaction just like we do. You know, for goodness sake, you know, humans will sit in a dentist chair and realize that, you know, every muscle in our body is tensing, you know, as if, you know, something's going to harm us, and all we're having is a teeth cleaning gun. So, you know, we have those similar patterns and reactions and self-preservation, you know, just like horses do. But, again, the important thing, I think, is to just look at it as that, is that it was just a moment of surprise, and the horse startled, and, you know, for whatever reason, it lost its footing, you know, just like, you know, we can. We just, you know, lose our footing and go down on one leg. You know, the nice thing about horses is that, you know, they can lose their balance on one foot, and they have three others to balance on. So it's not like us. When we go down on one leg, usually, you know, the rest of us is going with it. So, you know, that's something to think about, too. You know, you can be as prepared as possible, and yet, you know, those things can and do happen. And, you know, all the preparation in the world can minimize, you know, risks, but we can't eliminate them completely. So, you know, it sounds like you've done a lot with the horse to take it to a lot of places and expose it to a lot of environments. But probably the greatest danger in this, you know, scenario is to become complacent. You know, we tend to kind of make assumptions and think, oh, well, this horse is, you know, old Dobbin, and, you know, anybody can ride it in any situation, and everything's good. So, you know, just be ready. Just, you know, that's why, you know, I ride my horses, you know, and I gear up. You know, I have a hanger on her that I call it a hanger on her. But if you look at my DVD that talks about saddling, you know, I have what's called a common term for it is a stampede string, but I call it a security strap, and that gives my hand a place to go to hold on to keep my seat in the saddle, you know, if and when, you know, things kind of go wrong. And even if it's something just, you know, like you're describing, the horse got startled, it got surprised, and it lost its footing and slipped and went down on one knee. So, you know, to me it's about not making any kind of assumptions, not becoming complacent. And it sounds like you're very secure in the saddle. You're very confident in the saddle, which is all great. So just look at it as a one-off kind of a thing. But in the back of your mind, just always be ready for those kinds of things. So, you know, we could analyze why it happened and what happened with the horse and all those kinds of things. But if you just kind of look at it as, you know, I snow skied for years and years, and sometimes I just endo down the hill, you know. I'd lay there in a heap and go, wow, you know, I don't even really know what happened. But your brain in those situations is kind of takes that time to recalibrate and, you know, tries to keep it balanced and, you know, to prevent that from happening in the future. So I think if you just take this scenario and just kind of look at it that way, and, you know, in the future be ready, you know, but it doesn't seem like there's any reason to lose your confidence. It just seems like, you know, the horse got surprised, the horse lost its footing, you know, it's just, you know, manure happens sometimes. And I think the important thing to do is just look at it, you know, for what it is. You know, if it starts becoming a pattern of behavior, the horse starts becoming, you know, spooky or, you know, kind of irrational things, you know, things like that, then I think, you know, that would be an indication that the horse isn't viewing the person in position of leadership, you know, like they should. But it sounds like you're doing really nice things, so just keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, if something starts forming a pattern or something like that, you know, you may want to take a look at some things to, you know, strengthen that leadership, you know, from the ground and on the back as well. So that's how I'd kind of look at it for now. But if it changes or there's more to this, you know, please follow up with me, you know, if there's something more to be considered. But for right now, that kind of seems like how I would view it if that were the situation I were in.
Great. Thanks for that answer. The next topic is about bolting. I have a 6-year-old Mustang. I've been going through the training process again as he's decided that bolting is the thing to do. When I'm longlining him in a halter, he thinks he has to run at full speed. I can't seem to slow him down. The more I try to slow him down, the faster he runs. However, if I bit him up, double lunge line him, he'll walk, turn, woe, basically do whatever I ask. Until I have a cure for the bolting, I'm not riding him. I've hit the ground too many times, and I'm getting too old to bounce. Thanks, Donna.
Okay, I'll tell you what, that statement right there makes my heart so happy because there's just no reason, you know, to put our precious selves up on the back of a, you know, 1,200-pound prey animal that is designed to survive. You know, most domestic horses have, you know, really have not been in a true survival mode. So when a Mustang bolts or any horse bolts, if we can look at it from a survival point of view, you know, that horse would be voted most likely to survive in the wild. And it has, you know, that horse wakes up the next day because of those behaviors. So it's not that it's a bad behavior, it's a survival mechanism. What happens sometimes is horses, when they become confused, they go into survival mode. And people do that too. We get defensive, you know, in certain situations. We go into patterns behavior. So that Mustang in the wild, when it became confused or uncertain or anything, you know, Mother Nature doesn't say, you know, oh, just stand there and see what it is first. It says bolt first, you know, survive later. You know, they don't weigh their options. They get out of there first, you know, if they're going to be a good prey animal. So if we can look at that behavior and lose the frustration over it, I think that that's a really big part of it. Because when a horse becomes confused and then we try to help them, but it just becomes more confusing because now we've added pressure to the confusion, that can be something where the horse just says, man, I got to go some more. Now I really need to get away. So, you know, when we bit up a horse, we double lunch line, and we use, you know, all kinds of, and there's every kind of thing on the planet, you know, to control the horse and put him into frame, you know, and that kind of thing. You know, we can do those things because the horse has no choices, you know, and that's why they seem to work, because we take their choices away. And the horses that won't tolerate those kinds of things, they get labeled as a rogue, you know, or, you know, all kinds of, you know, choice names for horses like that just don't understand or won't tolerate it. So, you know, there's a place for collection. But collection, like in last month's teleseminar, we talked quite a bit about collection. There's different stages of collection, and there's also different aspects of it. There's mental collection, there's emotional collection, as well as physical collection. So what I like to think of is, what can I do for this horse to get the mental and emotional collection as well? Because you can bit up a horse, you know, people that in an audience, I'll have them raise their hand if they've ever been on a runaway horse, and most people raise their hand, and I'll ask them, you know, when that horse was running flat out with you, were you pulling back as hard as you could? And everybody says, yeah, they could. You know, that horse, a horse can run flat out with their chin on their chest. Be full on. I've been on that horse, you know, before I started getting more education about horses, because I just went, you know, I'm not sure I'm going to survive this. You know, hobby, this is supposed to be enjoyable. And, you know, here I am looking around going, wow, I'm going to really miss this place. So I really want to commend you for not, you know, putting yourself in that situation where that horse is not going to be able to think through the confusion, you know, up on their back. There's a couple of different ways to help the horse become more comfortable at speed. And that's really what's going on. The faster horses go, the more it triggers the survival mechanism. So a couple of different things. And one that would be interesting for you to try with this horse is when he gets out there on a long line and he's charging around, you know, sometimes that can be a lot of pull on us physically. So if you can get into a situation where there is a round pin that forms a physical barrier around the outside, still keep the horse on the long line. But, you know, with a round pin, you know, or even the end of an arena, a nice shape at the end of the arena, it can help that horse, because usually when they're going that fast, they're pulling on you pretty hard too. Not always. I've seen horses that, you know, they look like they're running sideways, you know, but still not putting any pressure on the line. Because it's just become a pattern of behavior. So what I like to do is just to allow that horse to find their comfort in their confusion. And that's, to me, the ultimate that we're looking for, is we're learning to develop our ability to allow that horse to become comfortable in the confusion. So if you have that horse go along and he hits top speed, and you just turn with him, and you just keep looking at him going, just admiring the power and the speed and the physiology that it takes to go that fast, you know, they don't really stay that fast for that long. I mean, you know, in that kind of scenario, I mean, 5 minutes feels like an eternity. But, you know, relatively speaking, it's really not that far. And so what horses will do is they'll hit top speed, and they'll go around and around and around and around and around, and pretty soon they just go, you know, where am I going? And I go, you know, I don't know. And the horse kind of thinks about it, has time to think about it. So it goes from their survival brain back to their thinking brain. And all of a sudden they kind of think about it, they have time to think about it, and they go, you know, why am I doing this? And my response is, well, I don't know. Why are you doing that? And then they go, I'm doing this to myself. You go, that's right. And then it's almost like their thought is, I don't have to do this. And I go, nope, but you can if you want to. Okay, that gives that horse the time to develop the ability to go into that state of confusion, that state of flight, to trigger the survival mechanism, and then to come back. from it. And in the beginning, if the horse hasn't been patterned to do that, it can feel like an eternity. But if you're consistent with it, they'll make their own discomfort. So, you know that phrase, make the right thing easy, the wrong thing difficult. Well, that's the wrong thing that's difficult. You know, the horse, but the horse is making it difficult for himself, if that makes sense. So allowing that horse the time to think through it, you know, what we tend to do is we think, well, you know, the horse is doing the wrong thing. This isn't what I asked him to do, and so therefore I have to correct him. Well, it's kind of a self-correcting behavior in that scenario because the horse can, you know, it won't take long before that horse gets winded and starts going, okay, what can I do, you know, to get back to comfort? And they'll usually come back in a relatively short amount of time. You know, make sure your footing's good, make sure it's not too hot, you know, make sure your conditions are right, it's not slick, you know, those kinds of things. But it's really a nice way to help horses repattern that behavior. So when they start to go into survival mode, they kind of catch themselves and go, ooh, survival mode doesn't feel good to me. I want to make different choices. So give that a try. I had a horse, I was shooting a DVD, and this person, you know, volunteered their horse. It was very nice, a beautiful horse. And they said, oh, yes, this horse is very advanced and, you know, these kind of things. It's not just Mustangs, you know, they get into a pattern of behavior. You know, it can be, you know, other more experienced horses, saddle horses. But I had this little mare, and she just had a pattern of behavior when that same kind of thing, when I sent her out into a circle, man, she hit Mach 10. And I just went, wow, you're athletic. And it was almost funny because, you know, the owner was saying, oh, well, you got to slow her down. You got to slow her down. I have to slow her down. And I just went, well, let's just see if she won't find a different pace herself. And it was really interesting because we realized, you know, after observing and then taking a different approach, because I said, you deal with this all the time. She said, oh, yeah, I have to check her all the time. That's what she called it. I was checking her up, checking her, slowing her down. And it was interesting because when we flipped it and I said, well, how about if we just allow her to find the end of her desire? You know, and you could see the person's mind kind of click because I said, you do this all the time. And she goes, all the time. And I said, when you ride too, she goes, yep. And I said, well, let's just see if we can't, you know, find that. Because think about this. If the release is what teaches the horse or reinforces behavior, when the horse hits Mach 10 and we stop them or we slow them, you can think about it from their point of view. They almost think, well, if I want to stop, I need to speed up. And I created this pattern in a horse years and years ago. She would go walk, trot, Mach 10, and then I would stop her. I'd be like, whoa, I hate that. And I didn't realize that I wasn't helping her move through that behavior because I was inadvertently reinforcing it. So that's something to consider also. You know, so just go try it. I mean, the horse is already hitting Mach 10. So it's not like by letting the horse go at that speed and keep going at that speed that you're going to create something new. The horse is already demonstrating the pattern of behavior to have the desire to hit that speed. So, and what you're doing isn't resolving it. So try something else. And this is why, you know, I offer the teleseminars is so, you know, people can write in and say, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is, you know, the approach that I've been taking, you know, it's not working. What else could I be doing? You know, and if that doesn't work, you know, send me a question back again and say, I tried that, but you know, this pattern of behavior developed and you know, this is what's going on. You know, there may be something else that works for that horse. So, you know, that's, to me, the value in the teleseminars is to, you know, get another suggestion, get another viewpoint, get another consideration, and try it. You know, get out there and try that. So, I'd really love to hear how that works because every time I've done that, boy, whether it's riding or on the ground, you know, for people, it just seems to be a real, real breakthrough for the person and the rider to say, you know, boy, I had to have that horse, you know, find that themselves. You know, that's the biggest difference. You know, to me, the study of horsemanship is how do you get what you have in mind to become the horse's idea? You know, how do you get that horse to say, you know what, going around here at Mach 10 is too much like work. You know, maybe I'll find this nice, soft little canter, you know, when I'm in this particular situation. You know, that's how you start developing that ability to ask a horse to go in any direction at any particular gait, speed, transitions up, transition down, all those things. But like I said in the beginning, I really want to commend you for not putting your precious self up on the back of a horse that doesn't understand it. If it's not good on the ground, it's very unlikely that it'll be any better up on the horse's back. I know a lot of people think it is because we can get on him and we can get a hold of him and we can say, okay, now I've, you know, got everything under control. But, you know, if anybody's been in horses any amount of time, most people will agree that control is an illusion. Influence is what we move towards, in my opinion. You know, control is this idea that, you know, I can get enough leverage or enough gadgets or enough, you know, physical limitations, you know, on this 1,200-pound animal to limit the movement of it. But to me, if we influence the mind of the horse, the body will follow. Okay? So give that a try and let me know how that goes for you.
Thanks, Karen, for that answer, and thank you, Donna, for sending in that question. This topic is about rearing. I have a horse that will occasionally rear under saddle. He's come over backwards on me once and has literally butted heads with my son. He is only 5 years old. We've had him since birth, and we hate to give up on him. But everything we read says that once they start rearing like that, there's nothing to do but get rid of him. I know he's not worth anything with this problem and would hate to pass him on to someone else knowing that he has this issue. Otherwise, he's a great horse. Any suggestions? Angel.
Okay. There's hope. You know, it's a really great question. I really, you know, another great question this evening. But, you know, rearing is a very powerful maneuver. It takes a lot of effort, a lot of physiology. It sounds like this horse has, you know, is very athletic, very intelligent, and it's developed a pattern. Like, you know, if this horse were sold to somebody who does, you know, who has a, you know, trick horses for movies, you could charge a lot of money. It sounds like this horse wants to go have a career in Hollywood or something. But if you want to teach a horse to rear, you know, it's about inadvertently having the horse, you know, the horse can only go 6-7 directions, forwards, backwards, right, left, up, and down. And sometimes, you know, they can do more than one of them in a very short amount of time. But rearing is the up maneuver, and it's natural for horses to do that. They do it when they play. They do it just when they're sparring with other horses. You know, it's a very natural maneuver. But in order for a horse to do it, their hindquarters needs to be engaged. So, you know, if you think about taking away the power in the hindquarters, okay, that's the key to it. That's the key to leadership on the horse's back. It's the key to, about every other teleseminar, you know, horse kicks, you know, there's all these kind of behaviors take a very athletic physiology. It requires a very athletic physiology in order to perform the maneuver, you know, if you will. You know, we're sitting there saying, well, you know, the horse is rearing, and I hate that. But, you know, if you were a trick trainer in Hollywood, you'd love to have that horse because they have that physiology and that willingness to extend that effort and that energy to do that, you know, to lift their big body, you know, clear up in the air and hold it. Now, it's about taking away the hindquarters. A lot of times when these things happen, what happens is the person doesn't realize that they're pulling back on the reins, but sometimes it's, you know, the horse is wanting to go forwards and it can't go forwards because we're holding them and they go up. Now, when a horse goes up, you know, if people don't have an awareness, you know, at hand, where this comes into a problem is that, you know, it happened already because the person hadn't developed the awareness in their hands yet and the feel in their hands. That's what created the problem in the first place. So it makes sense that when the horse starts to come up, the person who doesn't even realize that they created the maneuver, you know, the horse is offering a response to their request, that the hand doesn't let go and the hand keeps pulling, because in our mind, you know, we're told this from the very first time that we ride a horse. Oh, that horses are easy. Just pull them to whoa. You know, and I've had people, you know, the horse is backing up and they don't want the horse to back up, but all they know in the brain and muscle memory says, I want you to whoa, and I'm going to pull on the reins to have you whoa. Well, the horse is already going in reverse. So now we pull on the reins, and people don't understand why the horse isn't whoaing. So, you know, these things about muscle memory, this question actually relates back to a pretty common question where people will say, well, you know, you teach riding from the ground. You know, what is that, and why is that important? And people have all kinds of, you know, names and approaches, you know, doing things from the ground. And people think, oh, this is really new, and, you know, just why don't we just get on and ride that rascal? Well, all riding from the ground is it's an isolation of developing an amount of feel in your hands for the horse. So I call it riding from the ground because people say, well, you know, why are we riding? And my response is, you are riding right now. You call that a lead line, but that's your rein. That's your rein. And if your feel of your lead line slash rein isn't, you know, highly skilled or communicative, you know, on the ground, when you put your precious self, you fork a leg over the back of a 1,200-pound animal, and now it goes into motion, your awareness of what your hands are doing goes right out the window, because now here's all this power and muscle and physiology underneath us, you know, with these behaviors, and everybody has felt this, when all of a sudden that power comes through and you go, wow, I didn't even know a horse, you know, could feel like that, you know. And then we spend all this attention and time and, you know, consideration and tools and training and all these things to restrict that movement, where what it's really about is how do we channel and direct that movement. So here's the good news. It's not hopeless. It's not hopeless for this horse to repattern these behaviors. The reason that so many people say just once they learn how to do that, give up, get rid of it, that kind of thing, the reason people say that is because the reason the horse did it in the first place isn't going to change. You know, it and so if we have a propensity to pull on the reins, but you know, the horse wants to go and the horse tends to go up, and then we release the reins, or worse, pull, you know, keep pulling on the reins so the horse comes over backwards on top of us. You know, if that pattern and muscle memory is still within us, then yes, get rid of that horse and find a horse that'll tolerate that, you know. But that's not really the answer either. You know, the answer really is do some things on the ground to develop your awareness and your feel and your timing and your release and the feel in your hands. You know, that's something that needs to be developed. You know, I don't know anybody. I met with the head trainer of Cavalia, you know, years ago, and we had a discussion, and, you know, the show Cavalia is one of the best examples, and I've seen lots of examples of horse-human communication that I have admired over many, many years. But I'll tell you what, I can count on one hand that, you know, the people that are in this caliber of communication with horses. And when I met Frederick and had the opportunity to visit with him and talk with him, and he asked me, he said, you know, tell me what you do. And I said, I try to help people develop feel with a horse. And he just took a big breath and kind of not rolled his eyes, but he kind of goes, oh, he goes, how do you do that? And I said, well, what do you mean? And he says, you know, I can teach the horses, and I can have this communication with the horses and all this, but he says, I can't hardly tolerate, you know, people leading my horse, because I just see, you know, it's like dancing with Freddie Flintstone instead of Fred Astaire. So, you know, helping people develop the kind of feel that that horse needs so that it doesn't even become confused, so that the behavior never even emerges. But once it does, just step back, get down onto the ground, get the cornerstone for communication, the writing from the ground, and just start stepping through the basic communication and rebuilding the extent of communication that you need. If that had been done from the get-go, the problem never would have emerged, okay? And to be honest, now you're kind of digging out of a hole, which is just reshaping a pattern of behavior that ideally never would have, you know, developed in the first place. But because you're in the scenario, it's even more important to go back to that foundation and build that foundation from the ground up again. Okay, I've seen it happen. I've seen horses with all kinds of behaviors, you know, rearing, charging, bucking, you know, all these kinds of things. And when the people go back to the ground and just rebuild that foundation, it's not some magic pill that says, you know, and I've heard people say, you know, strike them or, you know, bash a water balloon on their head or crack an egg on their head so they think their head's bleeding. I mean, there's all kinds of crazy, kooky advice, you know, out there. But I don't know about you, but I'm just not athletic enough with my water balloons to bang them on the head with a water balloon when they start to rear. What you're going to do is have the type of communication and the feel in your hands and your legs, you know, that horse would never feel the need to even do that. Or if you did feel them tightening up and becoming confused, you'd know right what to do, you know, to take one side away and disengage that hindquarters and diffuse that emotion, diffuse that thought, and then go on, okay? So I would say with a behavior like this, you know, this is life and death stuff here. You know, this isn't, you know, how do I improve my golf swing or my tennis game, you know? This is stuff that's going to keep you and your family safe. So, you know, please get the education. Please get the tools. You know, if you go into this, you know, and try it for a few weeks or a few months, if it doesn't work for you and the horse is still rearing or you, you know, feel unsafe or any of those kind of things, send it back to me. You know, send it back and say, you know, this didn't work for me. But, you know, I really feel passionate, you know, and that's what really drives me to do what I do is, you know, I just think of the people who's, and the horses whose lives become better just because they've, you know, stepped out of doing what they know and they're looking for more information. And they're going to try a different approach, you know, to enrich their lives and have more enjoyment, more safety. It'd be a shame. It'd be a shame for you to, you know, have that horse that you've had since birth and just say, well, you know, there's nothing that I can do. There are things that you can do. But the horse isn't going to change until we change. And to me, that's the biggest problem. And I really want to commend you for even writing in this question because, you know, that takes guts to put yourself out there and say, hey, there's something I don't know. I'm getting this advice. You know, is there something else that I can do? So it's something to consider. It's something to try. If you're not willing to try and learn a different method or to go through the foundation and, you know, change the feel that you have in your hands and those kinds of things, then I would agree that you need to sell the horse because the behavior is not going to change until we change. So I know I get a bit carried away and I get passionate about these things, but, you know, I just feel that, you know, when people's lives are in danger, you know, that really triggers something in me, you know, as it should. And also think about it, you know, that horse, where, like you already said, where is it going to go? Where is that horse going to go and what kind of life is that horse going to have with that kind of behavior? So just take it as an opportunity. You know, you've raised this horse. You would obviously, you know, love this horse very, very much, you know, raising it, you know, from a young horse. You know, just step into a new approach and see if that doesn't, you know, resolve and minimize the issue. And I'd love to hear how it goes for you.
That's great advice, Karen. Thanks very much. It sounds like these people writing in really are looking for some answers. They love their animals, and there's just some behaviors that they want to change and want some advice on how to do that. And it sounds like you're really helping them out, giving them some great ideas tonight.
Good, thanks. I do this myself. I do this myself. I have a new puppy. It's a stock dog breed, which is a different type of breed. I've had working breeds in the past, but this individual has different patterns of behavior that I'm not familiar with. And I'm taking the same principles, doing what I know. Like people will go, you know, well, you know, you shape behavior all the time. You know what to do. It's like, well, you know, I think I do, but why not keep searching? So, you know, there was a dog expo here a few weekends ago. And I went, you know, I've been to a lot of horse expos. I've been presenting at the horse expos. I'm going to go, you know, see what this dog expo is about. And I went there and I searched for education and I searched for knowledge. And, you know, out of this huge expo, you know, this was a Phoenix Cardinal Stadium, the entire floor, you know, has booths and everything you can imagine. There was only one place that I could find educational DVDs, only one. And I saw the DVD, I looked through the titles, and I went, oh, there's the pattern of behavior that, you know, I'm still seeing, you know, what do I need? And boy, I went home and put in that DVD, and I went, oh, you know, I didn't think of that. And, you know, it worked so well. I mean, and it wasn't magic pill, like, oh, all of a sudden the puppy's behavior just magically went away one time. But it's a way to respond. It gave me another way to respond to a behavior that broadened my tools that, you know, the behavior is absolutely being reshaped. And so it's kind of funny because, you know, people think, oh, well, this is just how the horse is, or this is how the dog is, or this is how the kids are, you know. But it really, you know, with this day and age of, you know, technology age, it's, you know, really when you think about it, it's not that much effort on my part just to go and get this DVD from somebody who deals with, you know, so much more variety of patterns of behavior than I do. And I just went, oop, there's that little tidbit that I was looking for. That just makes sense. And, you know, it works. It absolutely works. But it didn't mean that the pattern behavior just never came up again. But when the behavior does come up, I know how to respond to it. So the behavior is shaping. It's becoming less and less and less and less all the time. But, you know, without that little bit right there, I would have kept doing what I knew to do and, you know, would have probably not been seeing the behavior change, you know. And then people think, oh, well, you know, it's a young dog, so that's just, you know, how puppies are. And, you know, I don't buy that. I go out there and go, you know, I want to know what to do. I want to know how to respond in every scenario, in scenarios that I'm not familiar with. And there were other things on the DVD that I valued as well, that I went, oh, that's another way to think about that. So I'm in the same boat. We all are. You know, there are things about horses that I don't yet know about. And that's why I keep searching. I keep looking. I keep an open mind and try things, you know. So many people say, oh, well, I don't like that or that's not going to work. Well, how do you know if you just, you know, dismiss it and don't even try? You know, if you go and you try it and it doesn't work and you go, huh, that didn't work the way I thought, then do something else, you know. But if you never even try it, you never really know. So just try things. Try things and see how they work.
All right. Our next topic is about mounting. I'm 64 and had an accident several years ago while riding and fractured my hip and lower back. I now find it difficult to mount my horse. I work in the barn, climb steps, and walk every day, but I just don't have enough strength to get the job done. I've been using a mounting block in the arena, but I can't carry it on the trail ride with me. Any secrets or suggestions? Thank you, Linda Jane.
You know, there's a couple of different aspects in here that you know, I'm thinking of. You know, part of it is, you know, strengthening. You know, and it sounds like, you know, you're already doing that. You know, you're walking a lot and doing a lot to, you know, strengthen yourself and be able to do it. But you know, it's just a fact, you know, whether you've had an accident or, you know, for whatever reason, you know, I know people who are, you know, born with physical limitations that aren't able to mount the horse. So, you know, there's you know, several different things to do. There are products out on the market that are extensions of the stirrup that may be something that you'd want to consider, you know, taking on the trail ride with you. It's something that would lower it down quite a bit. I haven't used them personally, so I can't give it a, you know, a personal endorsement, you know, like I usually would or a particular, but, you know, have a look at some of those things. I don't like recommending tools like that in absence of you know, people just making the effort to become more physically fit with horses. You know, to me, this activity of horses is a physical one and requires a certain level of physiology, you know, to do that. You know, we can make adaptations or work with, you know, therapeutic groups. You know, we can do all the things. I mean, there's folks that ride horses all the time that don't have the use of their legs or arms, you know, all kinds of things, and make adaptations to do it. So to the best of your ability. So that's why I don't really, you know of those stirrup extension products. And also another reason why I hesitate to recommend that is anytime you put any kind of device on a stirrup or anything like that, it becomes a breaking point. So the ones that I've seen, you know, I've looked at them and said, you know, but I'm not in that situation where I can't mount the horse, you know, from the ground. But I'll tell you what, I go to hot yoga on a regular basis. You know, I've gotten to an age where I'm just not able to, you know, get away with it. You know, when I was younger, I could kind of, you know, waller around. I was athletic enough kind of, you know, to be able to do stuff. But, you know, if I want to keep doing what I'm doing to the level that I'm doing that, I have to do some things that I'm not doing, you know, that I hadn't been doing in the past in order to maintain and even improve my physiology as I age. So hot yoga has been a really, and believe me, I am not a yoga person. I am the most non-bendy person on the planet. But it's just one of those things that I just have to do. And actually, after some time doing it, I actually have found that I enjoy the result of it, you know, in that physiology. So consider an extension, you know, something that will extend the stirrup. Just go on the internet and do some research. But keep in mind, you know, breaking points, you know, and things like that. The other thing is to teach your horse to get down in a low spot, you know, to where maybe you can get up on a low fence or a high spot and teach your horse to, you know, stand quietly while you mount and dismount while they're standing, you know, in a low spot in a ditch, or you can get up on a rock, you know, or things like that. Another thing to do is you can teach your horse to do what's called park out, okay? And what that means is the horse stretches their front feet forward and their back legs back, and they can stretch out to a point that it lowers their back a good 6 to 8 inches and sometimes more. So, you know, people, you know, see like in saddlebreds and some Arabian classes, they, you know, see the animals park out, and people think, well, it's they don't understand what that was really for. That was actually during the Victorian era, where a woman would ride side saddle and she'd have to be lifted up onto the back of the horse. You know, think about that. How did a woman in a side saddle in a full skirt, you know, get on that rascal? So they would teach the horse to park out. The other thing that it does is it creates a pattern of behavior where the horse stands still. It's actually, I've had horses in clinics where when the horse becomes confused, they go into a park position. You know, the horse doesn't know what to do, and they put their, you know, front feet way forward and their back feet way back, you know, and they're confused, but they're throwing the behavior out there. And, you know, I'll ask the person, you know, has the horse been shown and that, and they go, yeah, but, you know, I don't know why he's doing it here. But, you know, horses will throw out behaviors when they're confused. They'll throw out past behaviors going, well, maybe it's this, you know, that's all that they're doing there. But it's actually, when a horse gets parked out like that, it's actually difficult for them to pick themselves up to move forward. So that's why You know, another reason that if you want a horse to stand still while mounting, you know, when you teach them to park out, it lowers their back and also teaches them to stand still, because it's actually kind of hard for them to pick themselves up again and start walking again. You know, they have to kind of rearrange their legs to do that. The other thing is you can teach a horse, you know, cue them to lay down. You know, I've seen people and I've taught my horses to lay down with a on command. I don't recommend doing that for, you know, people that are having trouble, things like that. It becomes a trick. You know, I'm not a supporter of people teaching horses tricks versus communication. They're two very different things. And I know people that have come along and say, well, I don't want to do all that other stuff. You know, I just want to do the fun stuff. Just teach, you know, show me how to teach my horse to lay down. And I don't agree with that because it just becomes a trick. But I do know people that have had physical limitations that can actually cue their horse to lay down, get their cart or, you know, get their wheelchair or whatever it is close enough to it, you know, enough to get onto the back of the horse and then cue the horse to stand up when they're ready and prepared. So, you know, the sky's the limit. You know, there's lots and lots of options for you to be able to get on your horse, on and off your horse safely when you're in any kind of scenario. But, you know, usually having a horse get into a low spot, you know, you stand up on the high spot and teach that horse to come over and get next to you. You know, teaching a horse to stand still, to come over and allow you to get on from the rail of the arena. But, you know, be careful of that rail. I see people teach that, you know, and they have people who aren't comfortable. They've never sat on an arena fence. It's one of the most dangerous things that, you know, people do. They get up on an arena fence and go, you know, I'm going to fall off of this thing trying to, you know, trying to wangle my way up onto the back of the horse. The horse is being good. We just haven't done that. A lot of times we, you know, when we're little kids, you know, when we were kids, we would walk the walls. We had, you know, walls down the fence lines of the houses, you know, where we lived. And we get up on an 8-foot, well, probably not 8-foot, seemed like it, probably about a 7-foot wall. And we'd walk down the length of the neighborhood, you know, on the back of that wall. But, you know, when's the last time I did that, you know? So, you know, we just don't do those things so much anymore. So there's, I guess, you know, for my answer here, if I can leave you with, you know, use your imagination. Again, if you don't have a communication to have your horse stand still while you mount, go back to the ground. Go back to that communication, the cornerstone for communication, riding from the ground, and get that foundation right, you know, with your horse. Because you're already realizing, like, you have a mounting block, you know, at the barn, but you can't take it with you. But you can always take communication with you wherever you go. And that's why I'm, you know, kind of throw these answers out there for, you know, a big part of it is to inspire people to expand. You know, we've got great communication already. Why not expand it even further and keep taking it further? You know, the horses enjoy learning new things, and we just add more tools to our toolbox. And then, to me, that's what longevity with horses is really all about.
Well, thanks, Karen. Those are some great ideas that she can take out on the trail, and sounds like she'll actually have fun, you know, practicing her imagination, and the horse will enjoy it too, seeing what, how many different ways she can figure out how to mount her horse on the trail.
Yeah, that's great. Or you could teach the horse to lower his head and lean across his neck and pick him up pick you up on his neck. And I taught that and do that as well. I'll just throw that other one out there just to really freak you out. But don't just go out there and go, you know, do it. There's a lot of communication and knowledge that you know, is behind all these things. So, okay.
Great. We have time for one more question. This is the last one, and it's about bits. I would like to know the best progression of bits and how strong they need to be. I have a 15-year-old that needs a curb for the 4-H show. He's only been trail ridden in a full cheek snaffle. He's been a trusty horse and safe to ride in the snaffle. I never graduated him to the curb that I now need for my son. How long should it take for him to be safe and not overly reactive to a curb bit? One trainer told me 2 days. Another said a month was not even enough time. I need professional advice that I can do this right. I am thinking my son will only show at halter due to this situation. The horse is big and my son is only 10. I will not put him in a place neither can handle without confidence. Thanks, Kristen.
You know, that is a really big question. And there's nothing wrong with curb bits. There's nothing wrong with a shank bit. But it's, in my opinion, in my humble opinion, the use of that particular tool has been misunderstood and misconstrued to a point where people say, okay, the horse is 4 years old, now it goes into a curb, you know. And to me, that's not about developing that horse. You know, when you're looking at the subject of horsemanship, and horsemanship, you know, by my definition, is the study of all aspects of horses. You know, riding is one piece of this bigger topic of horsemanship. So, you know, when we get into organizations or activities or competitions, you know, what we tend to do is do, you know, it's the definition of normal, doing what everybody else is doing simply because everybody else is doing it. And then we get rules written about it. And that's what I'm hearing in your question is that, you know, there are these rules, but, you know, here's my son, here's the horse, here's the situation, here are the conditions. The rules don't seem to fit the scenario. And I would agree with that. So if you're asking me, you know, So in that kind of a scenario, what I look at is that, you know, if my horse isn't prepared for that situation or the person isn't prepared for that situation, then, you know, we may have our goals, but, you know, to me, we would never want to sacrifice our principles, you know. So if I ask a question, what's more important to you, your goals, your principles, you know, people will say, well, my principles. And then right away they'll go, well, wait a minute, my goals, but my principles, what about my goals? See, so, you know, this journey with horses is, you know, to me it's about not sacrificing our principles of building the communication of the horse and the person. And that's what 4-H is all about. You know, 4-H is all about giving, you know, children and young adults, you know, the knowledge to have the interaction and the communication, you know, with various, you know, ag subjects. And it seems to be that, you know, when it comes to horses, that there's this structure and we say, okay, the horse is this age or we're showing at this level and now the horse, you know, has to go to the curb. That's like saying, well, the child's in fourth grade, so he needs to be, you know, doing calculus, you know, and that's kind of a stretch or an exaggeration, but you get the idea. You know, or even in calculus, if anybody's been, you know, gone into taking physics or calculus or, you know, chemistry or biology, you know, whatever it is, you can get into a situation where just because you're a certain age, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're ready for that. So, you know, you have to ask that question yourself. What's more important to you, your goals, your principles? Is there a way to reach your goals without compromising your principles? Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, how many people are willing to do that? You know, that's up to you. But if it were me, I would go back to that foundation and have your son develop the skills and develop the ability, you know, first on the ground, up on the horse's back, you know, get that lateral flexion, help that horse find vertical flexion so that when you do introduce the curb, that horse understands it. You know, for somebody to say a week, you know, or a month or a year, you know, whatever. How can you say that? You know, that's like saying, when will my child be ready for calculus? Well, you know, it depends on the child. It depends on the teacher, you know. And on the other side of things, too, some people have such high level of skill and feel in their hands that there's a wonderful book. I'm not recalling the name of the author right now, but the title is One Man's Opinion on Spade Bits. And he talks about starting colt in a spade bit. Now, can he do that and do it well and have that colt be confident and understanding? And, you know, absolutely. But he's like who taught Fred Astaire. You know, he's the dance teacher who taught Fred Astaire how to dance. You know, he's at that level. So when somebody says, well, it takes a week or a day or, you know, whatever, that's them, you know. So you're right to ask these questions, and you're right to, you know, question the rules, and you're right to say, you know, what's my journey? What direction is my journey going to take for the most enjoyment for, you know, yourself, your horse, and your son? You know, that's your enjoyment and your safety. You know, those two go hand in hand pretty much with horses. So, you know, my recommendation is to, you know, follow that path, you know, on the ground, up onto the horse's back, you know, just follow those steps to develop that horse to where, you know, I've heard it said, it was a wonderful saying that, you know, that the horse gets to a point that the communication is so high that the horse is asking for a more advanced bit. It's asking for more subtle communication. You know, that's what a bit is really all about. So when you ask your very first question, you know, about bits, the true response to that is to invest in the bit of knowledge. You know, it's not about a bigger bit or a certain type of bit or the magic bit or any of those kinds of things. It's about having that bit of knowledge that will take you to the next place to get that next bit of knowledge and the next one and the next one. And it just keeps building, you know. And to me, that's an enriching experience, you know, between horses and humans. And that's what 4-H is all about. It's what 4-H is all about. And there are some 4-H groups that are, you know, taking a little bit different approach with their horses, and they're succeeding. You know, the kids feel good, the horses are feeling good. You know, they're not necessarily following the rules established by the original 4-H structure. And some organizations, you know, and you understand they have to have the structure and, you know, the things that have worked best for years and years and years. So it doesn't always work in all clubs. But there are clubs out there that are, you know, kind of taking this approach that I'm, you know, describing to you of developing the communication and the ability to develop the person and the horse, take them from their current ability just to that next stage and keep building on that. Okay? And that's what our experience with horses is really all about. So great question. Really great questions tonight. I want to thank you for all those really good questions.
Well, thank you, Karen. Yes, they were great questions tonight, and we thank everyone who did send in their questions. We're at the end of the teleseminar here. I just wanted to get Karen's final thoughts on something, on some things. It seemed like a lot of these questions had to do with short subjects, and I wanted to mention that you do have a problem-solving series of DVDs out there that cover the some common problems such as clipping, de-spooking, kicking, needle-shy pacewarming, and pulling back. So I don't know if you want to talk about that for a minute or two, or is there something else that you'd like to just close with tonight?
Well, those are really good things, you know, to touch on. A lot of times I do the teleseminars, and I never talk about, you know, the education, the extensive education that's provided, you know, on the website. You know, we're shooting more videos this weekend. You know, and I'm committed to capturing the knowledge that I have and offering it to people. But, you know, you can lead a horse water, but you can't make them drink, you know. But you can make sure that they're good and thirsty before you make the bet. You know, that's a wonderful way to think about those things. I can offer the education, but I can't do it for you. You know, I wish I could. I wish I could tell you in a teleseminar and, you know, and go, ding, you know, your problems are over. But that's just not realistic. You know, and I do, you know, when I get done with teleseminars, I'm kind of hoarse because I don't drink enough water while I'm doing it. You can hear me just, you know, talking to my old minute to share the knowledge that I have because I am so passionate about helping people with their horses. But don't let this limit you from, you know, expanding your education. You know, we should have a library of DVDs and education, you know, with so many different aspects of our life, but, you know, especially horses. You know, like I said, like with, you know, my new dog here, if I, you know, don't find, you know, if I don't have enough tools in my toolbox, you know, the worst thing that will happen is that maybe I can't have her around other dogs or I can't have her off property or, you know, she might be dangerous. Who knows, maybe I'll be on, you know, Cesar Millan's, you know, show. I mean, that should be everybody's goal in life is not to end up on a show like, you know, Jerry Springer or something like that. But especially if it's just a matter of pursuing that knowledge and trying new things and adding, you know, strategies in your toolbox. I mean, that's what our horses and our dogs and our children and our spouses and our employees and we deserve. You know, we deserve to have, you know, joy and safety and happiness and a good long life. And knowledge is the key element to getting it there. It's not a trick or a gadget or a new doodad. You know, there are plenty of those out there. But I don't know about you, but I had the tack room full of those kinds of things until I really started pursuing a psychology-based approach, which is what I share with other people and offer today. So take a look at the website. There's lots of video to look at. There's lots of education. There's lots more information out there for you to learn and enjoy and integrate into your interactions with horses.
Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us on Free Teleseminar with Karen Scholl tonight. Karen, thanks for being so generous with your time and with your knowledge and helping people have a better relationship with their horse. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you so much, Mark. Everybody have a good evening.